If you don't like Andrew Yang, I think you might be kind of a jerk. Welcome to the Techishly Gen podcast. We are smart tech for real life. Think of it as your girlfriend's guide to gadgets.
Here to help us, tech life columnist Jennifer Jolly.
Here to help me test them out, Jennifer Jolly.
Jen is the nationally syndicated tech life columnist for USA Today. You always blew our mind.
Jennifer Jolly, whose name is just fun to say.
Jennifer Jolly!
Hey there, welcome to Techishly Gen. I am back here with producer Scott, and OMG, talk about not another boring tech podcast.
Can you believe it? It's only episode 2, and we have a huge get this week.
Yeah, we really did. We just finished our interview with a former presidential candidate, political outsider, and now mobile carrier CEO.
It has been months and months in the making, but today is the grand launch of Noble Mobile.
Yeah, that's right. Andrew Yang is back, y'all. And this time he is not trying to win your vote. He is trying to lower your phone bill and maybe, just maybe, reset your relationship with technology in the process. If you remember Yang from the 2020 Democratic primaries, he's that guy who wanted to give everyone $1,000 a month in universal basic income. If you remember him, then you already know he is not afraid of big ideas. That campaign, which started as a super long shot, it gained real momentum, real fans, and the so-called Yang Gang, and sparked real conversations around automation, AI, and how modern work is leaving millions of people behind.
Andrew Yang went from this
long shot candidate from New York
to this.
Andrew Yang! Andrew Yang!
And when he talks, it lands, in part because he's saying things that are unique.
Since then, what's he done? Well, he's run for mayor of New York City. He's launched a centrist political movement called the Forward Party. And most recently, like just a few days ago, started a new mobile phone company called Noble Mobile.
Are you serious?
The big idea? Take on even bigger wireless carriers. Make it easier than ever to ditch doom scrolling and maybe, just maybe, fix a small piece of what's broken in our modern digital lives. Let's get into it. Okay, so here you are. What is Noble Mobile? What massive everyday problem does it solve?
The vast majority of Americans are not pumped about their financial lives, their ability to save, their ability to get ahead. And people know me probably, if they know me, as the let's give everyone money guy, because AI is going to come and eat our jobs. And so this is another way to put money back into Americans' hands.
How exactly does Noble Mobile work?
Noble Mobile is a carrier that gives you the best of all worlds. So what are the problems right now with your mobile provider? Number one, they charge you too much. Number two, you're paying for an all-you-can-eat buffet when maybe you need to go on a little bit of a diet in terms of your screen time. And so imagine if you had a new carrier, Noble Mobile, that charges you less and charges you based upon consumption. So you actually have a disincentive to doom scroll, pledges never to sell or resell your data for any purposes, and does even more because we partner with wholesome companies that can improve your life. So what this means in real life is that you can get unlimited wireless for $50 a month, but you can get a rebate of up to $20 based upon the data you use or don't use during that month.
So I have smartphone on AT&T. Now what?
I was paying Verizon $140 a month, and now I'm paying Noble $48, let's say. So I'm saving almost $100 a month, which is real money. I mean, it's, and then you imagine that compounding and the rest of it. So number one, more money in people's hands. But number two, we want to be your friendly companion that reminds you to doom scroll a little bit less and put the phone down and look at your dinner companion. Look, I doom scroll as much as the next person, but if I knew I was costing myself money, I would feel really dumb. And then maybe I'd stop 15 minutes earlier. There's no reason why something we use every day just has to be an extractive utility. It might actually be able to help us achieve our goals.
Americans aren't really known for doing what's good for us. You know, when you approach average American and you say, do you want to keep spending more for your wireless, or do you want this actually sensical plan? Why isn't everybody jumping in?
One of the things that I do always bear in mind is that, you know, I'm a consumer and the average American is harried and a little bit stressed and somewhat mistrustful. And I have changed my carrier zero times in 25 years until Noble. And even for me, it was discombobulating. I don't blame the average American, but I got to say, breaking up with a 25-year vendor relationship in the form of Verizon in 5 minutes and then saving $1,000 essentially immediately, it put a spring in my step. It was kind of wild where I think we have to overcome the emotional resistance that really doesn't have any rational basis in order to succeed. And I'm very eager to take on that challenge. But I don't blame people one bit because we're all human beings. And if you go to any of our banking statements, like we all make irrational decisions every single month.
This is the first phone plan that pays you to use your phone less. True? False?
First one we found.
Yeah, so explain that.
Well, we wanted to be on your side. And we thought that if you can look up and log off a little bit more, then you'd probably be mentally healthier and happier with your life. And now you get paid if you do that. Right now, the current pricing structures for cell phone plans is that we give you an all-you-can-eat buffet, and then you're kind of overeating. It's really the takeaway. I do want to be totally clear. If you end up using a ton of data in a given month with Noble, you don't owe us any money. It's still the same $50 flat fee. It's 50 bucks for unlimited. So if you're someone who just wants to not think about this stuff ever, totally fine. But if you are someone who wants to get rewarded or change your habits a little bit or even just get some transparency into what you're doing, then we hopefully can be a useful resource.
What else do we overpay for that you can tackle?
You know, I'm really excited to find out, Jennifer. I mean, you can tell what drives us, which is just to try and improve people's financial lives, their mental health, hopefully their ability to connect with folks in positive ways. When you joked before about, like, you know, being the popular kid, like, I'm not really the popular kid. I was the nerdy kid.
Yeah, here's what strikes me about you. You're friends with everybody. I mean, who gets to call Scott Galloway or Jonathan Haidt the anxious generation? Of course that makes sense. Of course Prop G makes sense. Mark Cuban, in many instances, you're a tech bro, but you're not a tech bro.
Well, I consider myself a problem solver, and hopefully that there are tech bros who also consider themselves problem solvers. Now, I think that maybe many of them could broaden their definition of the problem they're trying to solve. I mean, I appreciate the implication that I'm somehow better intended than others, but, you know, I mean, for me, Jonathan Haidt, Scott Galloway, they're taking on very, very meaty human challenges. You know, I like to believe I'm doing the same. And if you get energy, in other words, in my case, if people have been excited about any of the work I've done, then it just pushes you to want to do more.
Andrew, complete this sentence. In 10 years, your phone will be...
In 10 years, your phone will be a reflection of your values, identity, and community in a way that it is not now.
What does that look like in a perfect world?
In a perfect world, instead of us being kind of subjugated to these megacorps, you would wind up with a user-centered and user-based experience that's built more around what you want for yourself and the people you want to be connected to, the goals you might have. And interestingly, some of the goals might involve not being on the phone. You know, they might involve touching grass or seeing a new place. So that's the dream. The reality is that most of the economic forces are driving us towards various versions of the economy that I suspect are going to be less human-centered. I'm trying to pull us in the other direction. And I think that there's a real zeal and energy there.
We know that social media sucks us in and keeps us plugged in. We know it steals our attention. It's addictive. It gives us dopamine. Our phone gives us dopamine. Your newsletter this morning was about get your damn phone out of your bedroom. We all know we need to do it. But what will drive us other than money to actually get it done?
You know, I've managed to get my phone out of my bedroom. I'm happy to report to her.
It's, well, your kids, you have two teen sons?
I have one who's turning 13 and then one who's 10.
Yeah. So wait till they're in college. And then you're like, what if I miss a call from my baby in the middle of the night? Like, I mean, the struggle is real.
I mean, I'm sure there'll be more of that a little bit later on. But having your phone not in your bedroom, I think genuinely is like a habit that most people can achieve. I genuinely think you rest better. There's some other things that maybe you can adopt too around notifications in particular, because being subject to the buzz or the bing or whatever it is, also studies have shown, and I'm someone who, you know, tries to home in on data and studies and facts, that stuff really takes a toll on your ability to focus, your attention, and it stresses you out.
Yeah, you've said that this is about more than just phone bills. It is about mental and financial health. So connect the dots for us here. How are most tech companies brainwashing us? And how do you plan to deprogram us?
Well, so the way most tech companies make their money now is around engagement, which sometimes translates into revenue and advertising dollars. And so you wind up getting sucked in and mindlessly scrolling or flipping or whatever the physical gesture is. And that's a byproduct of a decision that was made a number of years ago to make a lot of these companies ad-supported because they didn't want to charge for Facebook accounts or whatever it was. And so there was this magical period when we thought it was cost-free. And then it turns out the cost is in here and on our well-being in various ways. But then it was too hard for them to go back and put the genie back in the bottle. I had a very, very dramatic proposal. People know me for dramatic proposals, but like I thought we should just make Americans ad-free in terms of social media. And then to the extent that the social media companies were going to lose money, it's like, the U.S. government now buys you out of like all of the advertising on these platforms and then bombard everyone in other countries. We're very much subject to incentives and we respond to them. And these companies have had incentives in a certain direction that have driven us to distraction, both literally and figuratively.
Yeah. So your answer is we'll pay you, we'll make your life better, and help you feel better about yourself and your family. We'll reconnect you to the things that matter. Did I get that right?
We're going to try our best. We're going to be the good folks and not sell or resell your data. We're going to be on your side. And I will say, we do want to keep innovating and problem solving. A lot of Americans' moods are profoundly influenced by what's going on with their bank account. And if they feel like their bank account is growing, they feel better. They feel like their bank account is shrinking, they feel worse. But people talk about, it's like, oh, can this really help with your mental health? It's like, I have a feeling if you're paying $50 less a month, you'll actually feel better.
You know, you've like, said that early adopters, the first 10,000 people, get perks. What are some of my perks? Am I going to have an ownership stake in this company?
We are going to make it so that you do have an ownership stake in this company in every meaningful way. But then as the company grows and becomes more successful, we want to share the value with our first 10,000 customers. And we'll do that in fun startup-y ways. But one of the things that made me a little bit annoyed, Jennifer, and this is going to say something about me, whatever. So Ryan Reynolds, spokesperson for Mint Mobile, they get bought for over $1 billion by T-Mobile a couple of years ago. And I thought to myself, it's like most Mint customers did not even know that happened. If X years from now, Noble Mobile becomes a massively successful enterprise, we're going to reward the first 10,000 people because that's just the kind of thing that you want a company to do. And one of the fun things about Noble, too, is that we want it to be the extreme referral brand where if you tell your friend, you get a free month, they get a free month. And if you're like an enterprising sort, we want you not to have to pay for your mobile because you just told friends and family and customers. My barber switched to Noble and he said, like, I'm not going to pay for my wireless all year. And I was like, I believe you because you're just going to be able to onboard people.
One of the first things I thought when I heard about this was, okay, the SmartList guys, the SmartList hosts have just launched their own MVNO, Trump Mobile, Mr. Beast. Why is everybody jumping into the mobile game? Why this? Why now?
If you think about it, this is a $167 billion a year consumer marketplace that all of us use every single day. And there's no values, brand identity, or customer-focused innovation going on, really. And that's bizarre. And so one of the things that excited me about Noble Mobile is like, okay, let's try and introduce some dynamism and energy and innovation in this marketplace. Right now, the prices are based on an understanding that's decades old. And I said on my podcast, look, I joined Verizon 25 years ago when it seemed like the best network. And then here we are 25 years later. And I'm like an elephant who was tied in place by a rope when I was a baby. And then now it turns out I'm completely free to walk around, but we all operate like the rope is constraining us. And so I think you could have a world where people are toggling among different carriers in different ways, because it's only 5 minutes to switch. The devices and the networks now have reached parity in a way that's making it very hard for someone to differentiate. If you were to rewind to, let's say, 2018 or 2019, when I was deciding to run for president, at that time, I thought the single best thing I could do would be to alert Americans to the fact that AI is coming, and then try and mainstream solutions like universal basic income. I'm someone who wants to help people, wants people to live better lives. I think that there are a lot of folks who are suffering needlessly in the richest and most advanced society in the history of the world. We're doing a shitty job of having most people feel good about their future and their family's future. And so I want to try and help. And I think Noble Mobile can help. I mean, it's something that we all use every single day. Politics and policy are still on the table, but I'm simultaneously very patient and impatient. If you choose one route, you might just be there waiting for a while. And so I'm definitely willing to try different tacks, all with the same goal in mind. And I hope that it feels like a through line to people.
It constantly surprises me when someone, I interview so many people, I talk to people like you who make so much sense. But then I turn around and I look at what Americans are doing. And it just floors me on how dumb we are and how we constantly do things that are so bad for us. How do you break through to the mob, the madness, especially with what's going on right now?
Well, I referred to it a little bit earlier, Jennifer, and when I was running for president, someone said, look, you make perfect sense, but that's not going to work.
I mean, honestly, it's what we're all thinking. We're like, this makes so much more sense. Nobody's going to do it.
Yeah, no, and so what you have to do is you have to go to other parts of the body, is what they said, which was interesting. Is like, you're going here, and then now you have to go here, or you have to go to some other place. And that's something that I think is true. I think even the super rational lucid among us, which I suspect makes up your listeners and audience, even we're subject to emotions and reactions and the rest of it. And so you just have to try and make the case here and in other fun ways. And that, to me, is one of the opportunities of this time, is to try and reach people where they are. One of the spirits you can tell is I try not to judge anybody, because we always have more in common than not.
So how do you deal with the political landscape today?
One of the things that I'm particularly proud of is that my advocacy organization, Humanity Forward, helped increase the child tax credit that's going to kick in next year, and it's going to put about $80 billion in working American families' hands per year in perpetuity. So I'm always trying to do things that work. And sometimes, you know, political opportunities arise. I mean, people ask me if I'm going to run for office again, and one of my stock responses is, apparently I've got 30 more years. And then sometimes they laugh. It's like, but do we have 30 more years? And I'm like, I see what you're saying.
Given what's happened, just like, I am having such a hard time not engaging in the social media discourse on fascism and the attacks on the radical left. I mean, all of that. I was so vocal last time. It took me getting paid to stay off social media to refrain.
There you go.
So what is your, like, give me that emotional, visceral feeling of like, what the hell are we doing this week in particular when we feel so threatened, when we feel so scared?
No, Jennifer, I think most of the images and messages that are enraging or distressing us are coming to us through our phones. Genuinely. I mean, you and I are old enough to remember when we would do something called read a news story.
And trust a news story. We knew what journalism was, and we trusted it for very good reason.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of truth to the fact that we have Stone Age brains and godlike technologies. One of the things that makes me feel better is to walk the streets. In my case, I live in New York, and I look at the average person on the street, and most of the time they're not thinking about the thing that I am upset by. You know, that they have something else in their mind. It's generally much more mundane and, you know, survival oriented, honestly.
Whoa, that makes so much sense. Imagine that. Again, you're making a ton of sense. What's the dumbest thing you believed about success before you ran for president?
The dumbest thing I thought was that there were people above you who knew what they were doing. And then you get there. Like, one of the things I said to Zach, my campaign manager, was like, welcome to the highest level of American politics, because like we would be exposed to some Veep level. I'd never been asked that question though, Jennifer. That's like, that's some good work. I'd never been asked that.
Yeah. So biggest thing, your biggest takeaway was like, we're all in this together, and it's not like somebody else. Like, you know, we have that imposter syndrome. You're not feeling that anymore.
Well, one of the things that got me to run for president was meeting two of the three previous presidents and thinking, like, you know, like, fine.
Who were those presidents?
Well, so I met Barack Obama multiple times, Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. And with none of them did I think, wow, this person is just otherworldly and like way above me. I just, like, they reminded me of people I worked with, honestly. And so I was like, well, geez, if these guys can do it, you know, like, we shouldn't necessarily be putting them on a pedestal or on high in that way. I mean, that's at least one of the things that got me to run, was a sense that, you know, I might be able to contribute and help. And then honestly, that sense really sharpened the further I went, because when you go into the belly of the beast, you're looking around and be like, oh, like, a lot of these people, at some point you realize that you are the cavalry, that there is no other cavalry. It's like, you know, I mean, you and I are, I think, similar generation too, that we are now the adults in the room.
Yeah. I grew up in Kenai, Alaska, third generation Alaskan homesteaders. You are the son of immigrants. I have felt that, like, I don't deserve to be here, that imposter syndrome a lot. And I thought about that, about you. Like, what gives you the nerve? What drives you? And what inspires you to do and be who you are?
Oh, it's so kind, Jennifer. Sorry. I don't think you should feel imposter syndrome at all. I mean, you seem phenomenal. I think people should take shots at various things because, you know, in my case, I ran for president. I did not win. And privately, I never thought I was going to win, in the sense, it's like, I can't wait to be president and measure the drapes and stuff. Like, it was never like that. Like, I had a vision of trying to do something positive, and I felt, you know what? I mean, interestingly, like, I felt like I did what I set out to do, but I also felt much more negatively about the future. So both of those things were true. It's like, oh, I actually kind of overachieved, and I feel lousy about where we're heading. And so that's what fuels me to keep trying to do other positive things. I'm very lucky where people have gotten behind me, and I've got a fantastic life and a wife that has not divorced me, and like two kids that still kind of want to be around daddy. So, you know, like, least I can do is try and help.
Well, as the son of people who immigrated to this country, what does this immigration madness feel like for you?
It's very disheartening. I think most Americans have some kind of reasonable perspective on immigration and just about every other issue under the sun. And we're getting whipsawed back and forth by these ideological extremities that have unfortunately gained much too much power in our current political system. I mean, that's my perspective. So most of us could come together and hammer out sensible immigration policies and compromises in a weekend. Like, we know what we need to do. And it makes me sad that there's so many folks who are being subject to these wild swings back and forth.
The rhetoric, political rhetoric. And most of it's happening on social media or social media like Discord, Reddit. What do you do about that? What's Andrew Yang's big fix for that? What's ripping us apart right now?
Andrew Yang's big fix, and you referred to it earlier, Jennifer, is that you would never want just to have two sides in this kind of equation, because then you just really do wind up with like a back and forth. And my comparison is, imagine if you had a sports league where you only had two teams, how would the fans feel about each other over time? They would hate each other. And that's what we've been reduced to. So the worst number of parties you can have is one. The second worst is two. And then the third worst would be three. And three would be vastly superior to two, because then you'd have this middle zone where neither side could just blame the other. Because the middle zone would say, hey, if you want to come work with us, we'll do it. By the way, at this point, the majority of Americans would be in the middle zone, because so that structurally is what we need. Imagine if that third party had six U.S. senators in the middle. They actually could make a huge difference. You might not even need six. Maybe if you had three or four.
Yeah, highly encourage anybody watching or listening to this right now to watch and listen to Andrew Yang's TED Talk, because he addresses this extremely well in the TED Talk, which was number, I don't know, five last time I checked.
Yeah, it was number seven. My friend Scott Galloway was number one. So hats off to Scott.
It was really interesting to me when I heard that Scott is behind this, one of the earliest cheerleaders of Noble Mobile.
More than a cheerleader, he's one of the first big investors. And I think he was driven by his teachings around the algebra of wealth and teaching people how to get ahead, where I joked with him, hey, instead of writing a book about it, why don't you just build it into people's cell phone plans? And then he laughed and was like, that would work better.
So that's what you're doing. Exactly.
Yes.
Is it better to be a good person or to be filthy, stinking rich?
I don't think it's an either or, like, God willing. But I try and tell my kids that character is the most important thing, and that you don't need gobs of money to have a great life.
I hope more parents are saying that, and I hope more young people are hearing that. Give me your most unpopular take on big tech.
Wow. Unpopular? Geez. I mean, now most of the things I think most people think. I think I'm just going to tell a story that's sort of similar. So a few years ago, CNN wanted to make a TV show with me called The Future Of with Andrew Yang. And it was like Future Of Transportation, Future Of Healthcare. And then they ran a focus group and came back and said, hey, Andrew, bad news. Americans don't like the future. So we're going to have to think of something else. And the unpopular thing I might say about big tech is to say, look, guys, you have to try and make people excited about the future. And if they're not excited about the future, then you're doing something wrong. Because these companies are unfathomably big, rich, powerful, and influential. And they should be doing more to make us all feel optimistic instead of feel like we're trending towards something more sci-fi dystopian.
Yeah. Okay. That needs to be our next hour-long conversation as I deal with the Coinbases of the world.
Maybe, Jennifer, when I'm out in Seattle for our giant offline party, you and I can sit down and we can have that hour conversation.
I'm making the switch. I'm taking the one T-Mobile phone and I'm making the switch to Noble Mobile. I'm excited. I'm in the Yang gang. Andrew Yang, former presidential candidate, super cool guy, and now the founder and CEO of Noble Mobile. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Coming your way to Seattle. To be continued.
Can't wait. That was Andrew Yang, former presidential candidate turned mobile carrier CEO. He's not here just to pitch you a new phone plan. He's here to start a rebellion. What do you think, Scott? Am I being overly dramatic?
No, I thought it was a great conversation. We don't really see mobile carrier CEOs talking so openly about putting phones down. So I thought it was a great conversation and he was super interesting. So I'm going to jump over to Noble Mobile.
So we'll do that as a separate video, like showing what that's like and what we think. So our review coming up. Here's what I can tell you. I want this to work. I want a tech company to have my best interest in mind and stand up for what's right, not just for the bottom line and building a successful company, but what's right for you and me as human beings. What'd you think about today's episode of Techishly Gen? Be sure to let me know. Follow our newsletter. Reach out on the socials. Can't wait to see you right back here on the next installment of Techishly Gen.